Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janabala Pa Girivari Dhani. Jaya Gopi Janabala Pa Girivari Dhani. Yashoda Nandana Vrajachana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajachana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachadi. Yamuna Tira Vanachadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivachakacharya Ashtotarishata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivachakacharya Ashtotarishata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Samabeta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28. Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life. And today's text is 59. So please repeat.
Tasmin tvam ramaya sprishno. Tasmin tvam ramaya sprishto. Rama mano shruta smriti. Rama mano shruta smriti. Tat sangad idrishim prapto. Tat sangad idrishim prapto. Dasham papiyasim prabho. Dasham papiyasim prabho.
Please chant. Anybody on this side? Tasmin Swam Ramayash Vishto Ramamano Shutasmiti Tatsangadi Jishin Prapto Tasam Papiyasim Prabho Tasmin Swam Ramayash Vishto Ramamano Shutasmiti Tatsangadi Jishin Prapto Dasham Papiya Simprabho Tasmin Swam Ramayash Vishto Ramamano Shutasmiti Tatsangadi Jishin Prapto Tatsam Papiya Simprabho.
Word for word synonyms, please repeat. Tasmin, in that situation. Tvam, you. Ramaya, with the woman. Sprishtaha, being in contact. Ramanana, enjoying. Ashutasmriti, without remembrance of spiritual existence. Tat, with her. Sangat, by association. Idrisham, like this. Praptaha, you have attained. Dasham, a state. Papiyasam, full of sinful activities. Prabho, my dear friend. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear friend, when you enter such a body along with the woman of material desires, you become overly absorbed in sense enjoyment. Because of this, you have forgotten your spiritual life. Due to your material conceptions, you are placed in various miserable conditions. Purport. When a person becomes materially engrossed, he has no capacity to hear about spiritual existence. Have you met anybody like that? Forgetfulness of spiritual existence entangles a man more and more in material existence. Such is the result of sinful life. Various bodies are developed with the material ingredients because of different types of sinful activities. King Paranjana assumed the body of a woman, Vaidarbhi, as a result of his sinful activities.
Bhagavad Gita clearly says, Striyo Vaishyas Tata Shudra, that such a body is low born. So who knows that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Translation? Okay, so that's Bhagavad Gita 9:32, very important verse which glorifies the process of taking shelter of Krishna. That simply by taking shelter of Krishna, despite one's birth, high or low, one can achieve the supreme destination. If one takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, he can be elevated to the highest perfection, even though he be low-born. One acquires lower births when one's spiritual intelligence is reduced. So, translation again. My dear friend, when you enter such a body, along with the woman of material desires, you become overly absorbed in sense enjoyment. Because of this, you have forgotten your spiritual life. Due to your material conceptions, you are placed in various miserable conditions. So, all of us here have, well, at least I should speak for myself, but most of us here probably have taken birth in what Krishna describes as a low-born body. It's explained that Kalau Shudra Sambhava, that everybody born in Kali Yuga is of no better quality than the Shudras. So it doesn't matter what country we were born in, what social class we were born in, what ethnic group we're from, what gender we are. In Kali Yuga, everybody is born with a low birth. In this verse from Bhagavad Gita 9:32, Krishna specifically mentions Shudras, Vaishyas, and women. And he says that all these categories of human beings are considered low born. But he says one doesn't have to lament, because simply by taking shelter of me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can attain the supreme destination. So in the next verse, he says that if these people, the low-born people, why are they low-born? Because of past sinful activities. That if these people can attain the supreme destination by taking shelter of me, then what to speak of qualified brahmanas, Kshatriyas, the devotees. We're also taught that when one takes shelter of Krishna, then his designation is no longer that of the body. For us who are aspiring Vaishnavas to identify with this body made of skin and bones and blood and urine and mucus and bile and stool and hair, all these wonderful ingredients, to identify with this body is itself ignorance. And to identify a Vaishnava as their body is actually Vaishnava aparad. So we do not look upon fellow devotees as, oh look, they have this color body or this gender body or this social class body, or that is actually Vaishnava aparad, to judge a devotee by their outward dress. So in this verse, it's being said to King Paranjana that
Because you were overly absorbed in sense enjoyment. And why were you overly absorbed in sense enjoyment? Because you took a material body. And it's not so much taking the material body that's so terrible, because after all, when the Shakti Avesh avatars appear in this world, they also assume material bodies. So it's not the entering of a material body per se that is the cause of our problems. The cause of our problems is that we enter a material body along with a whole list of material desires. And because of this, we become overly absorbed in sense enjoyment. And as a result, it says, because of this, you have forgotten your spiritual life. So, due to your material conceptions, you are placed in various miserable conditions. So material conceptions are being pointed out here as the root cause of all evil. People often ask, where does evil come from? If God is all good, and God is all perfect, where does evil come from? So here it's pointed out that the cause of all evil, the cause of all suffering, the cause of all ignorance, the cause of all our problems is material conceptions. Material conceptions means how I conceive of myself. I identify like this, like that. So due to material conceptions, Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that material conceptions are like aromas. They seem so, like you can't put your finger on them. Like, aroma seems like something that doesn't really exist. You can't put it in a box or put your finger on it or see it. So aromas are very subtle. And one can't even see where the aroma comes from. You're sitting in your room and all of a sudden some bad smell comes, some bad aroma enters your nostrils. Where did that come from? What's the origin? You can't see where is the origin of that horrible aroma. So material conceptions are compared to aromas. They're very subtle. We can't even trace out where they come from. And what happens with aromas? They're carried by the wind. They don't stay localized. They don't terminate. Rather, they spread and spread and spread by being carried by the wind to the next destination. So similarly, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that our material conceptions are carried. Just as the wind carries aromas, so our material conceptions carry us, the living entity. They're carried with us to the next destination. They form our next destination. And based on our having so many different types of material conceptions, we get, as a result, different types of bodies. Did you notice that there's not two bodies on this planet Earth that are identical? Even one might be an identical twin, but they're still not identical. They're not exactly identical. Even if they look exactly identical, they're not exactly identical. So why do we have such varieties of bodies? So Krishna says, because due to all the different conceptions that we've carried from millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, we get a particular unique tongue and a particular unique ear and a particular unique eye, etc., 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 with which to carry out our material desires, which are based on that the material conceptions. So, in the verse, it was said that because of this, you have forgotten your spiritual life. You're being placed in various miserable conditions, not understanding what your difficulty is. So Krishna also says that ukramantam stitam vapi, bunjanam vagunanvitam. Vimudho nanu pashyanti, pashyanti jnanachakshushaha, that the foolish, those who have no spiritual vision or knowledge, they are totally bewildered when it comes to trying to understand how is it that a living entity gets a particular body? And how is it that they enjoy or suffer in that particular body? And how is it that they're carried to another body? In fact, it's so bewildering they can't even believe it, that the soul is carried to another body. In fact, they can't even really believe that the soul is there. It's just extremely bewildering. I remember when I was a kid, I used to ask my mother why I was born at that particular time. Because, you know, you learn about history. And it just always, you know, I grew up in a Christian family, and I remember, you know, reading the little children's books about Jesus. And I remember feeling really jealous that I wish I was born 2,000 years ago so I could have met him in person. And I felt really jealous. Why did those people get to meet him in person? And here I am 2,000 years later. It's not fair, you know? So I used to always ask like that to my mother, why was I born now? Why wasn't I born 2,000 years ago? You know, they can't answer. So that's what Krishna is saying. Those without spiritual knowledge, vimudha, nanu pashyanti, they can't see. But who can see? Jnana chakshushaha, those who have the vision of knowledge. So as aspiring devotees, we're supposed to be taking advantage of that knowledge and having such vision. So one thing that was said here was that due to our material conceptions, we've become engrossed in sense gratification, and therefore we have forgotten our spiritual life, our spiritual identity. But then in other places, we hear the opposite. We hear that due to forgetfulness of our spiritual life, we take on material conceptions and become materially engrossed in sense gratification. So the question might be, well, which comes first? Do we first forget our material identity and then take to material conceptions of life and material identity? Or, as it's said here, that you take a body because of material conceptions and you become engrossed in sense gratification and therefore you lose your remembrance of your spiritual identity? Seems like we're being told kind of contradictory things here and there. It's said that when Lord Brahma created as the secondary creator after Vishnu, the first thing he created was ignorance. And that ignorance is in fivefold ignorance. And the first aspect of that ignorance is forgetfulness of one's spiritual identity. And Prabhupada says there in that purport that unless one forgets their spiritual identity, they cannot identify with a material body. So there he seems to be saying the opposite cause and effect as today's verse. So how do we resolve this? Well, it's a little difficult because we're trying to think linearly, A caused B, and once upon a time this happened, etc. But it is described that our material life is, our entanglement in material life is more like a cycle. So, let's see. Prabhupada said that various bodies are developed with the material ingredients because of different types of sinful activities. So sinful activities cause the material bodies, but then the material bodies seem to cause the sinful activities. So in Nectar of Devotion, it's introduced there that sinful life is like a cycle. Avidya, or ignorance, is the fuel which keeps the cycle turning. And at the beginning of that cycle, if you will, the beginning, if you can say, where's the beginning on a circle? It's a little difficult to say. So it begins with avidya, it said. And from avidya, then, because of avidya, we have the seed of material desires, the bija, or the seed of sinful desire. What is sinful desire? Is sinful desire, I want to go out and kill somebody, I want to rob a bank, you know, we think of that as sin. But no, in our context, sinful desire means any desire, pious or impious, so-called good or so-called bad, any desire which is contrary to the desire to please Krishna. So the seed of sinful desire is there due to avidya. We don't understand that jivaras rupahoi Krishnara nityadas. We don't understand that my identity is that I'm Krishna das. And therefore my occupation is to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. So due to that ignorance, the seed of material or sinful desire is there. When a seed germinates, when it's a seed, it seems innocent. Oh, it won't cause any problems. It's just a little, it's a sinful desire, but it's in the seed form. Yeah, but the nature of seeds is they germinate. So when that seed germinates into a little plant, then that's called papa, or the act of sin. So now sinful desire has germinated into an actual act of sin. And what happens when there's an act of sin? Well, we learn in physics class, what? Yeah, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So for every papa or sin, we must experience a reaction. Sometimes those reactions happen immediately. They manifest right there in front of our eyes. That's called parabdha karma. It's a manifested reaction to our sin. I punch somebody and they punch me back. Okay, I get it. Thou shalt not punch. Okay, got it. Thank you. But then, so papa or sin manifests as parabdha karma, but it also manifests as aparabdha karma, or unmanifested reactions. I punch people, but they don't punch me back. I get away with murder. And then maybe in my next lifetime, I'm a nice person. I wouldn't hurt an ant. I wouldn't even think of hurting an ant. I'm just like the nicest person you could ever meet. Yet I become victimized by violence. I'm just an innocent person, and I get like all these punches coming my way and this and that. Why? That's the aparabdha karma, which now has manifested as parabdha karma. So from papa or sin, we get parabdha karma manifested. We get aparabdha karma, which is unmanifested. The nature of unmanifested reactions is that eventually they will manifest. So a part of that aparabdha karma will come back to us later as a parabdha reaction. And what else does the aparabdha karma do? It fuels, it feeds what's called kuta, or the inclination, the proclivity to be sinful. Then that kuta, or that proclivity to be sinful, when it matures, sits around and like brews for a little while, then it manifests as a full-blown material desire. And then it's the whole cycle goes again. From that material desire comes material action. From that sinful action comes the reaction. From that reaction comes an increased proclivity to sin. From that increased proclivity to sin, further material desires. Again, material act. It's a vicious, unending, self-perpetuating cycle. So that's why sometimes it's said, from forgetfulness of our sin, of our spiritual life, material absorption occurs. And sometimes it's said, from material absorption, forgetfulness of our spiritual life occurs. Because this avidya is feeding our sinful cycle, and the sinful cycle is feeding the avidya. So as we're trying to practice devotional service, we should be very conscious of this vicious cycle of sinful life, because it's actually within our power, due to the mercy of Guru and Krishna, due to the mercy of the holy name. It's actually within our power to put an end to this seemingly unending cycle. And how does one put an end to this cycle? Jnana Chakshusha, by the opposite of avidya, or in other words, vidya, transcendental knowledge. If avidya is fueling the cycle, then necessarily transcendental knowledge, or vidya, will stop the cycle. Also, we should not be discouraged. We have performed countless sinful acts in our life and our previous lives. So there's lots of aparabdha karma brewing within. And there's lots of proclivity to sin brewing within. And it's very normal or it's expected that that proclivity to sin will manifest in the form of real desire and then real act. But we have to always be conscious of this cycle and see where we're at. Oh, I notice a proclivity to be sinful. I see within myself this illicit desire. Oh, I'm a bad devotee. I'm a bad devotee because I see these illicit desires coming up in my consciousness. And sometimes I even accidentally act on them. Oh, I'm a bad devotee. I should just quit. No, this is the natural cycle. You can't really put an end to it just like that. Just like Prabhupada said, when you pull the plug on an electric fan, the blades keep rotating very quickly and then gradually they wind down. We can't expect it to just stop abruptly. So when we recognize, oh, I have some sinful proclivity or sinful desire or even a weakness to act sinfully, instead of being discouraged and saying, oh, I'm a bad devotee, rather we should say, aha, I understand what's happening. Pashyanti jnanachakshushaha. I can see, by the grace of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, I can see what's happening. Whereas the Vimudhas, the foolish people, they can't see what's happening. We meet people all the time. Oh, I would really like to be vegetarian, and I tried it, but it was so hard. I couldn't do it. I really want to give up, you know, some sinful addiction that I have, but I just can't. I don't know how to give it up. I'm like, they just can't see how they're caught up in the vicious cycle. So those who can see how the cycle is going on within themselves, then they can have compassion upon those that don't have such knowledge. And that is actually the whole purpose of Lord Chaitanya's coming to this material world. It's explained that in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says that the Lord is all glorious. And of all his glories, who can count the Lord's glories? Of all his glories, Prabhupada says, the most important one is his causeless mercy upon the conditioned souls in releasing them from the clutches of Maya. This is the greatest glory of Krishna. And that glory of Krishna is not fully manifested except in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna with an added extra dose, if you will, of mercy, causeless mercy. So this is Lord Chaitanya's topmost glory, his causeless mercy and compassion on the conditioned souls to deliver them from the clutches of Maya. And we get to take part in that distribution of mercy. Now we might say, oh, well, I'm actually that Vimudha that Krishna was mentioning. I'm actually the Vimudha who can't see how all this is happening. So I can't go out and preach. But actually, by going out to distribute the mercy, then one's own transcendental vision becomes awakened. One's transcendental eyes become opened. By not distributing the mercy, then we will actually lose our ability to see. So Prabhupada concluded by saying that one acquires lower births when one's spiritual intelligence is reduced. So that means all of us had that disease of spiritually reduced intelligence. So we took material bodies, low-born material bodies. Now we've been given the wonderful mercy of getting out of the cycle of birth and death. When we go out in the material world, we know what the problem is. We know what the medicine is for all the conditioned souls. So it's actually our responsibility, our duty, it's our fortune to be able to go out and distribute that knowledge to others. It's a privilege. We pray to Tulsi Maharani every morning, please give me the privilege of devotional service. So it's a privilege. Why? Because it's very rarely achieved, this platform of devotional service. And Krishna only bestows devotional service upon those who sincerely hanker for it. So by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we're actually calling out to Krishna, Radha and Krishna, please engage me. Please give me the privilege of engaging in your devotional service. And by engaging in your devotional service, I become so blissful, now I want to go out and engage others in your devotional service. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood, this is his mission, and this is our opportunity to take part. So we'll end there and see if there's any questions or comments. Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. You were speaking about how one should not feel discouraged when they find themselves overcome by sinful reactions. And my personal experience, more discouraging than actually seeing the sinful reactions manifesting, becoming a little bit, subdued by them. More discouraging is when you live in the community of the devotees and you don't feel encouragement from the community of devotees when you're going through those types of reactions. And I find that in our movement particularly, there's a tendency to have this puritanical attitude towards devotees when they're having difficulties in their Krishna consciousness. So that's on the one side. Then on the other side, when devotees are doing well in their Krishna consciousness, there's this tendency to want to see all the good qualities manifested. Otherwise, that glance of grace doesn't fall upon the souls. I don't know if I'm expressing myself properly. So then, unless I see the good qualities, then there's a tendency, oh, well, that's bad association. So therefore, I have to be careful not to get contaminated in that way. And in that way, one does not feel very encouraged when they're struggling in their Krishna consciousness. So I always want to know, how does a person balance the situation? On the one hand, you don't feel encouraged by the community of devotees, or on the other hand, you're in good standing, but I don't want bad association. And how does one deal with this?
Okay. So have you ever heard that song? It's an old song that it's not where you start, but where you finish, and you're going to finish on top. Anybody knows that song? I guess everybody's too young here. Okay. So it's not where you start, it's where you finish. Prabhupada said, when a person is in the shower, let's say you work in the coal mine, you know, you get really, really, really dirty working in the coal mine for like a straight week. And then you come home after a whole week of working in a coal mine to take the first shower after 7 days. You're not going to just go splish splash and you're out. You're going to be using scrub brushes, cleaning under your nails will take 5 minutes for each finger. You know, every part of your body is just so filthy. You have to scrub and scrub and soap up again and rinse off and do it a second time, do it three times. You know. So somebody's outside criticizing. Look how much dirt that's on that person's body. They're saying, oh, look, Prabhu, you have so much dirt. Oh, there's still dirt in your ear. Oh, looking under that fingernail. Oh, no. So it's really easy to feel discouraged if others aren't properly seeing. See, we're still guilty of not having proper vision. So, yes, we're all in the hospital together. None of us should be pretending that I'm cured of my disease and the rest of you are ill and I'm here just, you know, as good association for you or something. We're all in the hospital together. And we all have the same disease, which is material conceptions of life, but just the details or the flavor of that material conceptions may differ from one to another. So part of our practice is showing mercy upon each other. We talk big time, you know, we're always talking, yes, yes, let's go out and distribute mercy to the karmis, you know, the fallen souls, the meat eaters, but we don't even know how to show mercy to one another. So we're walking on this path together. We're holding hands, walking down the path together. None of us are strong enough to walk down the path by ourselves. So we will, no doubt, as we live together, we will smell the aromas coming from each other. Ooh, that person stinks, you know? Because we're going to be manifesting. All of us will, at different times, to different degrees, in different ways, be manifesting our sinful proclivities, our sinful desires might actually become a little vocal. We might even act on sinful desires and make a, you know, big show of it or something. And so then we might look at each other, oh, just see, he's not pure after all. He's like this and he's like that. She's like this and she's like that. But that's not the proper vision. The vision is the person in the shower? Are they in the shower? Or at least are they making an attempt to be in the shower? Maybe sometimes like kids, like when your mother's trying to force them to take a bath because they're all dirty from playing all day, and they jump out of the bathtub when they're not clean yet. No, 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 get back in the bathtub, you're not done. Oh, no, no, get back. It's painful. No, get back in. So sometimes we might even jump out of the shower and go do some nonsense. But do we have a sincere desire to be in the shower? So that's the vision we're supposed to have with each other. We should, just as we want others to tolerate my shortcomings, we should tolerate the shortcomings of others. That doesn't mean let the shortcomings go on. Ignore them. No, it means, okay, I see your shortcomings, your faults, whatever it is. How can I help you overcome that? How can I help you ride through that rocky storm? And similarly, when we're looking for association, we shouldn't say, well, I can only associate with people who always show bright and brilliant spiritual qualities. Like, oh, I saw a fault in that person, now I can't associate with them anymore. That person said something wrong. Oh, apasiddhanta or something. I can't hear from them anymore. Or, yeah. So this is the real loving relationships amongst devotees, is that we hear, we reveal our mind in confidence. That means when I reveal my mind in confidence to you, you don't take it as, oh, now I know everything bad about this person. Now I can think badly about them. I'm going to tell all my neighbors. Did you know so-and-so has this problem and that problem? No, revealing my mind in confidence means you're not going to spread it all over the world. You're not going to spread it to anybody. And you don't think badly about it. Rather, you think about it, oh, how can I help this person? And then counseling a person in confidence, encouraging them, not discouraging them. So yes, we should never feel discouraged in devotional service. And we should never be the cause of others being discouraged in devotional service. And if we feel others are discouraging me in devotional service, then maybe we should talk to those people. Because really, we can't go forward with our relationships if there's some lack of trust. And trust means, I trust when I reveal my mind, you're going to keep it confidential and you're out to help me, not out to criticize me. So we can't develop our relationship with Krishna if we're not properly developing our relationships amongst each other. So we have this topmost knowledge. We understand the cycle of sinful life and the proclivity to sin and et cetera, et cetera. We should examine our life and see what's happening, how the cycle is going in my life. We should understand that the root cause is simply avidya. We should understand that the path that I'm on, namely the performance of Sankirtan Yajna, is the perfect medicine for curing this disease. And it's the same medicine that each and every one of us needs. And we should always be in the generous mood of trying to encourage others to take more seriously to the process of hearing and chanting. And we should feel, we should make ourselves, we should allow others to feel that you don't have to try to hide your faults and your mistakes. Because sometimes that happens. I better go hide. I better not let the devotees know that I have this secret desire. You know, on my computer I'll look things up that are like maybe illicit, but I won't let devotees see my computer, and I'll just do it behind closed doors, or I'll do this. I won't let somebody know that yesterday I had this little, you know, fall down into sinful life. I won't tell anybody. What's the point of keeping it secret? Why do we keep it secret? The reason we keep it secret is because we're afraid that if we tell somebody, they're going to think badly of us, they're going to criticize us, they're going to go tell everybody, they're going to make it, you know. So we should have open hearts for giving, open hearts for receiving. And there should be no Vaishnava aparad of thinking, oh, look at, they have that body and they have that sinful proclivity, and that's Vaishnava aparad. We won't get anywhere with that. We won't get anywhere with that. And the public, when will the public take to the Krishna consciousness movement in great hordes? When will we be like burdened by thousands of people rushing in the doors, begging for our books, begging for this knowledge? You know, we've got the doors wide open. Do you see anybody walking in? You know, it's, right? But the day will come when we're going to have, you know, locks and chains and deadbolts on our door. And despite all that, the public's going to be rushing in by the thousands, busting down the doors, begging for our association and for this knowledge. When will that happen? Not unless and until the public perceives that we have such brilliant, loving relationships amongst each other. Because that's what actually attracts people to Krishna consciousness. It's not just the book knowledge or the good food or the nice drum beat in the kirtan. No, they're attracted, whether they know it or not. What's really attracting people to Krishna and Krishna's devotees is the bliss of the loving relationships that they experience. When they walk into the temple, they can feel the presence of prema here. They don't feel it in any other place. So we have to be very much exponents of that prema. And it starts with proper loving relationships with one another. Anything else? Bhakti Luke? Oh, then you can be next.
Hare Krishna. You're mentioning that in Kali Yuga, everyone is born Shudra. I can't give a very good reference, but I think in the beginning of Ishopanishad, the introduction, Prabhupada explains the four varnas and how they're always happening. They're always there. So I was just wondering about, like, because obviously there is some degree.
Yeah, so by nature, all four varnas are there, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahmana. But in Kali Yuga, virtually everyone is born Shudra. Virtually. Certainly there are actually some qualified Brahmanas and there's actually some qualified Kshatriyas. But now my challenge is, don't eat your next meal until you find one. So would you like to take that homework assignment?
No, thank you.
Okay, so this is how few and far between they are, right? And of course, those who are born devotees, that's like above the varnas anyway, so there's certainly, you know, one of the purposes of the Krishna consciousness movement is not just to make devotees, but also to breed devotees. So we're supposed to be bringing devotees into this world, you know. But except for those who are actually born devotees, it's extremely difficult. It's like finding a needle in a haystack to find a qualified Brahmana or Kshatriya in Kali Yuga. So it's not that they're totally unavailable, but it's very rare. And then due to bad association and what have you, they usually degrade anyway. Okay. And Prabhu, you had a question? You can turn the microphone on.
Vicious cycle, the proclivity to sin. Curious on how we should approach diksha, because in a way, you know, we're taking these vows, but I see this cycle like being real in my life, so I don't want to fall down from these vows I take at initiation. Or should we understand that when we take those vows, our spiritual master, he removes our sin or he takes our sin from us, even the proclivity to sin?
Okay, very good question. So sometimes we think, oh, I can't take initiation because I still have proclivity to sin and I definitely have a whole laundry list of material desires and even sometimes I act on those sinful desires. Therefore, I can never be initiated. Wow, that's an amazing statement. That means we have to become completely purified before we can get initiated, right? Then, I mean, initiation means beginning. Isn't that what the dictionary definition means? So how much purity does one have to take diksha? Does one have to be completely free of all proclivity to sin or to desire or to act? No. What it means is one has to have the sincere determination to keep winding it down, winding it down, winding it down. One has to have the sincere determination to not purposefully act on those proclivities to sin. It doesn't mean one might not accidentally act. Accidents will always happen, even on the royal road. But one should not purposefully act. So when one feels they have the proper determination, the proper sincerity to not allow sinful proclivity to overcome us, then one can formally take diksha. And it is explained at the time of diksha that one is absolved of their past karma. Then one might ask, well, then why do I, after initiation, still feel proclivities to sin and sinful desires? Because avidya is still coming and fueling that. It's our sinful reactions, our previous karma, is almost destroyed to nil, but not completely to nil. When will it be completely destroyed to nil? When we first come, it's like a mountain of sinful proclivity and a mountain of sinful desires. And as we associate with devotees and engage in bhajana kriya, it decreases, decreases, decreases. And then the stage of anartha-nivritti is where it's really, you know, cleansing. But even at the end of the whole long stretch of anartha-nivritti, there's still proclivity to sin. What does that mean? Bhakti yoga process doesn't work? Hearing and chanting doesn't work? I've been chanting for, you know, so many decades. Still there's the seed of sinful proclivity in my heart? I guess bhakti yoga doesn't work. No. Bhagavatam says that all these sinful desires and reactions are almost destroyed. They're destroyed almost to nil. And when does the nil part get destroyed? The last little remnants. It's like you have a bottle of wine, a clay pot with wine in it, sitting for so long. The clay is porous, so it absorbs the wine. So, but then you dump the wine out, there's no more wine, see? But you can still really reeks like wine. So then you wash it, and you wash it, and you wash it, and you wash it with so many different clear water or vinegar or whatever you wash it with. Still, it smells like wine. There's this remnant of aroma left. You just can't get rid of it, it seems. It will get rid of pretty soon, but it might take a long time. So when are our sinful desires and reactions and proclivities completely, absolutely destroyed? Not until we actually chant Shuddha Nam. And that's way past the Nishta stage even. All the way up to the Prema stage. It's explained that even in the stage of Bhava, which is the stage that precludes Prema, right? Adau Shraddha, first there's faith, then there's the Sadhu Sangha, associating with devotees, then there's the Bhajana Kriya, the initial taking up of copying the activities that devotees do, hearing and chanting, right? Bhajana Kriya. And then we become, you know, serious about it and take to the process of Anartha Nivritti, the big long path of cleansing, purification. When we're basically cleansed, then we attain Nishta, or real steadiness in our consciousness, right? And then what? After Nishta? Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava. These are long, many, 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 many steps. Whew. Then Prema. And even after, during those stages, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, there's still remnants. So what to speak of those of us who are way back here at the beginning of Anartha Nivritti? So we shouldn't be discouraged. We shouldn't be discouraged. We should see that this is my token reaction for having done all this sin in my past lives and lives and lives. But I have full faith that when the day comes, when, oh, when will that day be mine, that I can chant Shuddha Nam and have tears of ecstasy falling from my eyes. When that day comes, that's when all the sinful the remnants of sinful proclivity will be completely, absolutely destroyed in my heart. So one should not hesitate in taking diksha just because, oh, I still have sinful proclivity. One simply has to see, do I have the determination to stay on this path? Even if sometimes I fall down, I have the determination to pick myself up and keep going. One might lose so many battles, but we're determined to win the war. And that's what the spiritual master is looking for, that real sincere determination. Okay, we should probably end there. It's 8:45. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.